I find that, wow, this used to always happen too, that you would talk to a music education major, a young kid who was going into in the States, you know, mainly work in the public schools if they were doing this. And at that time, when you choose that major, a lot of them have no experience other than being inspired by their teacher. And when they go off and do student teaching, it's a brutal awakening too. So this is a tough thing. I think there's a lot that could be improved.
Hey teachers, it's Tim here. And have you ever wondered if you're actually living your true life's purpose? Maybe there's a bit of a secret project in the back of your mind that you wish you always had the courage to go and do. And maybe you've been held back by your fear of failure or worrying about the mistakes you're going to make along the way and what people might think. Well, I'm super glad that you're listening to today's episode because my guest today, MTNA keynote speaker for 2021, Angela Miles Beeching, is here to answer all those questions and set you on the right course. Now, for those of you who haven't met Angela, she is a superstar. She's been in the industry for decades, literally, and has made incredible changes and had immense impact on so many teachers and musicians around the world, particularly in the area of helping students in conservatories and college areas to find out more about career opportunities and entrepreneurship. And we talk about that, particularly her role at the Manhattan School of Music and many other things as well. So I think you're going to get a lot out of today's interview, and I'm really excited to welcome her on the show. But just before we do that, I wanted to mention that in just a couple of weeks, we've got one of our Top Music Pro members actually coming on a webinar with us because we're releasing a brand new series of videos inside Top Music Pro membership. And this has come as a direct result of member requests. And what our members have been telling us for a little while is that they would love more help and guidance on teaching some of the most common classical repertoire. And so we're going to be working with Jenna. She's going to be creating a couple of videos each month for us with a download about how to teach some of these intermediate classical repertoire pieces that are so well loved in most studios around the world. And to be able to see someone with the skill of Jenna be teaching this and showing you exactly what to do, it really reminds me, for those of you who haven't heard, of my own childhood music teacher who, when I came back to piano teaching 10 years ago, about when I started the blog, she took me under her wing and taught me everything that she knew about how to teach all these common pieces. And it was so, so helpful. And it gave me so much more confidence. And we want to pass that on to all of our Top Music Pro members. So there's a webinar coming up. I'm going to tell you the link and more about it in next week's episode. But I just wanted to give you that heads up. The Intermediate Classical Repertoire Teaching Series is coming to Top Music Pro membership. I'm very, very excited about it. Now, my guest today is a leader in the field of music career development. Angela Miles Beeching is the former director of career and entrepreneurship programs at the Manhattan School of Music, Indiana University, and New England Conservatory. She's a Fulbright scholar and holds a doctorate in cello performance from Stony Brook University. She's the author of the classic Beyond Talent, Creating a Successful Career in Music, a book we talk about briefly towards the end of today's interview, and she maintains a thriving online coaching practice, helping musicians get more of their best work out into the world so that they can finally become the artists they are meant to be. All of what we talk about today is equally relevant to both musicians and music teachers, and it's my absolute pleasure to welcome to the show Angela Miles Beeching.
I'm so pleased. Thank you so much, Tim.
It's wonderful to meet you. And I actually found out about you because of your fantastic keynote that you gave just recently at the MTNA conference, which was called The Hero's Journey. Sorry, How to Use the Hero's Journey to Rethink How We Navigate Through COVID and Beyond. So before we get stuck into some questions about yourself and some of the work that you're doing, can you give us a quick overview of what you were talking about at the conference for those that missed it?
Yeah. We did a little survey in advance of the conference asking people what their biggest challenges were this past year. And it was fascinating just to hear what people wrote in. And so really the hero's journey is a way of looking at how we face challenges and how we move forward. And It was great. We had people just pick the top three challenges, and of course we could get the numbers from all of that. That was fine. But we also added the category of other, and then people wrote in a little bit about what they were experiencing, and it's all over the map.
Mm.
I think the challenge of this time is, of course, daunting, but there's real opportunity. So that was the point of the talk. Yeah,
we've got to stay positive despite the challenges, and I know that you are one ball of positive energy and so supportive of all the teachers and musicians that you work with. And a lot of the work you do, which we're going to unpack a little bit today, it does help musicians and teachers with those two sides of the equation that I really focus on as well, which is supporting the business and the marketing and the self-publishing and whatever that is, as well as your ability to play and teach your instrument. Because so many teachers who went to college, of course, never learned really anything about business. And, well, many of them didn't even go to university in the first place. And it was really interesting when I found out that there were some universities that are catering for business and entrepreneurialism, like the Manhattan School of Music. And I then found out in my research for today that you actually were a key part of this. So Can you just tell us a little bit about that program there and how it's become a bit of a beacon, really, for what can be achieved for musicians in particular?
Yeah, sure. I was at MSM for 5 years, directing their Center for Entrepreneurship in Music. And before that, I was at New England Conservatory, where I ran the Career Development Center. And in between, I did some work at Indiana University. So this is a long passion of mine, I guess I would say. This area of entrepreneurship in music schools is something that sort of grew out of the career development programs. And I think Eastman was really the first school to sort of name it entrepreneurship. But the variety of these programs and the proliferation of them has really stepped up. I mean, it's been a 20-year process.
Yeah.
And of course, it's really needed, but still there are so many musicians, especially when they're undergrads, who are just not thinking this way. And that can be a really tough thing. They may just not even be ready to think about their art in those terms. And that's a hard challenge, because I taught these required courses for many years, and I wouldn't wish that on someone, you know. someone of faint heart. You got to be up for it. But on the other hand, student, this is the thing that would always kill me. Like you could find a musician who, in some ways, you think would never be able to spearhead a real project or create their own business or start their own ensemble. And because that may be the impression that they're putting across, that they are just meek and not stepping up to the plate. And then, of course, what happens is they fall in love with some idea. And it's like the fire in their belly. And then you're just surprised at what they're capable of. So much of the success of those programs has to do with being able to ignite and inspire people in some way to step up.
Mm.
And musicians, I mean, they're famous for this. Like, well, you know, why else? How else would we have all these fabulous ensembles and arts organizations and schools? It's because musicians were also leaders and they could do this.
I know one of the features of the work that you do with people is helping them find their core purpose, this fire, this passion. And I'm interested to know, take you back actually to your own music education, because I'd love to know what was the catalyst for this work that you're now doing. So can you take us back to when you learned music as a child and what kind of lessons you had and what instrument as well?
Yeah, sure. So I started out as a cellist because everybody in my family, all the kids played an instrument, and you didn't want to play an instrument that one of your brothers or sisters was playing. So I stuck with cello, and I was a typical musician in that kind of like blinders, like all I cared about was the instrument. I didn't want to, if there had been entrepreneurship courses, you know, when I was an undergrad, I would have hated them.
Why is that?
Because all I wanted to do was play the instrument. I was especially in love with chamber music. And my goal while I was in school eventually was to get a tenure track teaching job at the college level and play a lot of chamber music. And I like to explain that I'm one of those people that got exactly what I wanted, only to find out it wasn't
exactly what you wanted.
Yeah, it wasn't what I expected. And so that was devastating and bewildering, because you know, you identify so much with the instrument or with the role of being a, you know, an instrumental teacher, and it just wasn't working for me. So, but thank God, you know, when I had been a grad student, I'd had this experience of complaining to the music department that we didn't have a center or just some place to get the kind of detailed information and to learn how to promote ourselves or to book a tour or really, you know, apply for jobs or anything. And because the university had a general career center, but nothing specific for musicians. So the chair of the department said to me, write us a proposal. And I didn't even know what a proposal was. I wrote something up. I handed it in. I think they're going to do this. And they said, fine, we're going to make this your teaching assistantship. You get to start this thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's really positive, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, smart on their part, because they got super cheap labor, me, and I was like really, you know, interested. This was a means to an end for me. I wanted to know how to write grants because I ended up studying in Paris. And, you know, all of that stuff was on the road to getting the kind of job that I wanted. But somewhere in the back of my mind, I just also realized the work itself was satisfying because you were doing something you wanted to find out, but you were also helping other people in this process. And that, you know, I just never thought that that work was going to come back and bite me in the butt, you know, because after I got burnt out with the cello teaching and I moved back to Boston, a job opened up at New England Conservatory. And running the career center, because at that time, very few people had this kind of experience. And I took it thinking, oh, maybe I'll do this for a couple of years. And I was there for 17 because I really found I love this work. I love helping musicians find their own path.
Did you particularly find that because you'd been there yourself? So you could associate with how they were feeling and some of the frustrations.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But also that this, you know, realizing that each person is so different in terms of their challenges and their opportunities, and that thing is just so fascinating to me. And it's not disconnected from creativity. I mean, I find it really surprisingly creative, this work.
Mm. I mean, there's so many more opportunities now, I guess, for musicians with all of the online online options that we've got to sell ourselves and promote our music and things. But musicians have to know that is actually a path, I guess. And are you seeing now that more universities are adding this to their courses?
Oh, yeah. So I co-founded this weirdly named organization called the Network of Music Career Development Officers. That's a mouthful.
Rolls off the tongue.
Yeah. The almost acronym is NetMcDo. So it's like a bizarre disease.
Sounds like a McDonald's burger.
Yeah. And we meet once a year. Now, you know, with COVID, we've been meeting more than once a year, and it's people from all over the states, but, you know, other countries as well, who focus on this career development and entrepreneurship stuff. So
for musicians.
What I love about the group, the group really trades information on what's working for them, because there's a huge variety from programs that offer courses and certificates to programs that offer extensive workshop series. required courses and elective courses. I mean, there's a huge range.
I think there's almost another branch in this that could be lacking too, and that is this progress from, let's take you as an example, from you as a cello student to cello at university, studying performance, I assume, or were you studying pedagogy, no, performance? And then when a lot of these students finish their university, if they haven't had these kind of business and passion building exercises, they get out there and realize, well, actually there's 0.1% chance of getting a performance role in an orchestra, probably at best, because orchestra positions, they stay in it till they kind of get pushed out in a box at the end, really, don't they? I mean, they hold on to, if you get an orchestra position, you hang on to it. So the performance opportunities are very small. And so people end up teaching, which I've always thought is great because we need lots of great teachers. But of course, performers who want to be performers don't necessarily make the best teachers, particularly if they haven't had that as an education. So there almost seems to me that there's another path missing, and that's the pedagogy if you've just studied performance. Have you seen that play out as well?
Yeah, and I what I want to say is the I went to Stony Brook University in New York, and what would happen there is when you were awarded a teaching assistantship, you would have a meeting. At least this was my experience. You'd go into a meeting with the theory, you know, professor who would hand out class lists and textbooks. And it's like, here's your class, here's your text, go teach.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. It was really a sink or swim kind
of thing.
That's
pretty brutal. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it's awful, but people learn by doing. And then the ones who are really curious and engaged get the extra training that they need. But I find that, wow, this used to always happen too, that you would talk to a music education major, a young kid who was going into to, in the States, you know, mainly work in the public schools if they were doing this. And at that time, when you choose that major, a lot of them have no experience other than being inspired by their teacher. And when they go off and do student teaching, it's a brutal awakening too.
Mm.
So this is a tough thing. I think there's a lot that could be improved still, of course, in terms of how we teach teaching.
Do you actually know, are there any percentages of the number of music graduates, performance graduates, who end up being able to support themselves on a performance career versus a teaching, which, I mean, it's really probably that dichotomy is, they're the two options really, aren't they?
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah. Well, what I would find, I mean, this is how I would always explain it to students and parents, you know, in schools. The surveys that have been done out there almost can't quantify this way because musicians are always multifaceted, you know.
It's always a portfolio, isn't it?
Right. And these multiple income streams, this is normal. I mean, that is what success looks like. The vast majority of performers that I know are teachers as well. And so that's why I don't really make this distinction between the two. Of course, there are people that are better and what they do than others. But yeah, I don't know. I just always found teaching such a creative challenge and fascinating process that even though I no longer teach cello, the teaching of the career development stuff, that I love.
Mm. So I have a strong interest in the pedagogy of pedagogy as well. It's very meta, isn't it?
Yeah.
We mentioned a little bit earlier that one of the things you do is help people find their core purpose. I'm simplifying greatly, of course, here. You do a lot of things, but that's one of them. Another quote that I saw on your website talks about artistic vision. You mentioned it a couple of times, actually. And I just might mention this, and then perhaps we can dig in and you could help us or help our listeners start to think about it for themselves. You mentioned on your website, I teach professional musicians and teachers, for that matter, how to get more of their best work out into the world by using promotional materials that truly convey their distinct artistic vision. And then later you say, I'll show you how to align your artistic vision with a career plan so that you can do more of the work that feeds your soul. What a beautiful statement. I love it. So can you tell us about this artistic vision idea? Do teachers need, is that a good thing for teachers to have as well?
Yeah.
And what is it?
Yeah.
How do we do that?
I don't think of artistry as something that only performers have access to, right? And this thing about whether you're a performer or a teacher, you know, at any given point in the day, that it is really about igniting some spark in another person, whether it's your audience or your student. And it's about creating that sense of belonging and community together, that energy that is the verb of art, that's that connection point. So very often when clients come to me, they have a concrete issue. They need to build their studio, they want to get more performances, whatever it is. They have a project they need to raise money for. And we often start with these basic questions about some piece of promotional material that they need to get started with, which is often their bio, sometimes for teachers, their teaching bio or their teaching philosophy statement. And it really comes down to these core questions about why are you doing this? Like, who is it for? What is the change you seek to make in the world through your work? And, you know, mostly people haven't thought about these questions. And I find it scary that so many people, it takes applying to a college teaching job where they're asked for a teaching philosophy statement to, for the first time, to really think, okay, how do I teach and why do I teach that way? And what are the core aims of my teaching? And I've had people, clients say to me, I don't need that fancy stuff. I just need the basic stuff. I need my credentials here. I need to impress the hell out of the reader and, you know, get them to, you know, click, yes, I want a lesson. And the truth is, you know, just like Simon Sinek says, what moves people is why you do it. It's not what you do. And that thing about being able to come alive in some way through your promotional materials is so engaging because especially now people are starved for a real human connection. So if they read your bio and they have like a sense, oh, there's a real person here. There's someone who, you know, who has a quirky, you know, view of life or sees the magic that's right around them or in the music, then that's how you're going to be able to attract the right student, the dream student that you really want to work with.
I think you're right. When I studied education, I think that was the first time I did a teaching philosophy statement too, funnily. And I'd been teaching for some time. Of course, many instrumental teachers as well, by their own statement, fall into teaching when they're quite young.
Mm-hmm.
And so it probably isn't that surprising, I guess, that they haven't thought through those things because it's kind of just been what they always do. But right. There does come that point when if they want to grow or maybe they start losing students or whatever that they go, oh, I need some guidance here. I need to really think about what I'm doing. And the great thing I see in what you're doing, Angela, with this finding the core purpose and the passion is that it adds to the ability for teachers to differentiate themselves as well. They will start to stand out so they don't have to compete with that corner that corner music school charging $10 an hour for lessons. Yeah. Is that something that you also that links together the marketing side of a studio with that philosophy?
Yeah, what I would say is that idea of finding your core purpose gets to what is distinctive about you. Like it has to, because of course you're unique. And often in the conversations with people, we're talking about what they're doing now that they really love and what they want more of in their life, or what's that secret project that's been sort of tucked in the back of their head. Like I have this idea that I would like to teach, you know, beginning adult seniors, you know, like in a group thing. And I remember going to the NCKP conference one year and hearing about this woman who like specializes in that population. And I'm thinking, that's got to be the hardest group to teach, like, you know, really self-conscious adults. And And she was having a blast doing it. And I thought, oh, this is so amazing. So what I find is people always have like this secret project in the back of their mind that they haven't dared to talk about. And often just getting coaching is like the start of being able to picture that and, you know, again, make a vision of it and actually make the beta version of it. I think sometimes people are waiting for permission in some way, you know, permission to dare to be the person that they can be.
I know that you're big on storytelling as well and the power of that. How does that play out for the teachers and musicians that you work for? Is that something that works in their bio, or is it information more for their website?
Yeah, I think it can be in both places, but one of my favorite things to do is to get people telling me stories about how they got started or what their biggest challenge was or what their favorite, you know, teaching episode was from the past year. And because that's when you see them light up, and there's often clues to what's really at the core of their work. And that can be little bits of that can go into a bio, or if you know, depending on the story, it can work wholesale. So yeah, I think it's a clue to who we are. And the other thing I would say is too often we are carrying around unconscious stories in the sense of the negative self-talk that goes on in our heads that prevents us from building our studio, or because we tell ourselves, I hate marketing, or I'm really bad at networking. And those are, in a sense, shorthand stories that are really powerful because they keep us playing small in our career and in our lives.
I'm glad you mentioned networking, because that came up on your website in my research a few times as well. And I know that that can be quite difficult for music teachers. One, we're already isolated in our studios, and that's one of the reasons I've built my Top Music Pro community, to bring teachers of the world together. And secondly, music teachers can be quite shy about that if you're mm-hmm. talking formal kind of networking at conferences and things. So what kind of advice do you give teachers in that regard?
Yeah. I think it's hard, because there's on the one hand the shyness, and on the other hand a fear around being judged by others, or that we are judging others, and the fear that someone is either going to steal our students, or we're being perceived as stealing theirs. I mean, it's a competitive situation if you view it that way. So. And I think what's weird about professional conferences is that people are usually kind of on display. Like they ask them how they're doing, and then they're all just like, you know, showing just their shiny outside and not what the vulnerability that's there. So one of the things that I try to do is get people to start by networking with the contacts that they have, but maybe they've lost track of. People that they do care about, but they just haven't been in touch with. And especially now during COVID, I think people are desperate to have more connections and to be in touch in some meaningful way. So I think that's a good place to start. But the other thing is, you know, to have a circle of people that you can brainstorm with for future projects, when you're thinking about maybe launching a new offering for your studio or whatever, to think more creatively and to help you, you know, again, dare yourself into these things. Because I know for me, the things that I regret in my teaching are the projects that I didn't dare myself to try. Things that I thought, it's a little too risky in the classroom. Like, I don't know if I'm going to do that, because, you know, you think I'm going to fall on my face, and you think, oh, the students will hate this and I'll hear about it in the evaluations. Like, and I wished I had tried them, you know?
We've got a lot of systems and frameworks that we share with teachers about creative teaching and not using books and improvising. Yeah. playing, helping students learn the music they want to learn, all those kinds of things that are so important these days. And one of the things I always say is, if you teach like this, you're going to have some epic fails occasionally, and that's okay. And you know what? Actually, the kids and the students quite appreciate seeing that their teacher is trying, number one, and failing and learning at the same time. I think it's incredibly powerful. So I'm really glad that you said that, to just say, you know what? Yes, it is a bit scary to teach in a different way, or to put yourself out there, or to create a new product or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But making mistakes is the way that we learn, and it's okay.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing to model for our students as well.
I just think about, if we're not trying to do new things, like if we're not pushing ourselves into that unknown territory, then we're on kind of autopilot, right? I got to a point when I was, at one of the schools, just thinking, if I have to coach someone through how to write a resume one more time, I'm going to blow my brains out. And then I just thought, I've got to figure out a different approach here, a different way to help people, and a way to make it new for me. And I think this is really important for teachers to be always experimenting with new repertoire and new ways of teaching. I found doing the one-on-one work in some ways limiting, because you wanted to have this small group experience where people could hear from each other. So I created the video courses for teaching philosophy statements and for writing teaching bios. And when I first was doing this work, I thought, you can only do this one-on-one, because it's so, it's so individual, it's so specific, and people are kind of vulnerable and they don't want anyone using their language or whatever. And then I realized, no, there's so much to be gained from teaching in groups. So
I'd like to start wrapping things up, but I wanted to just ask, do you have any pointers for teachers, or perhaps things that you've seen teachers do either on their website or emails or whatever it is that's like, oh, this is such an easy thing to fix. Have you got like a top couple of things that you can bring up now that teachers hearing can go, oh yeah, I should do that? Big question, sorry.
What I would say is, people hide behind their bios. They use their credentials and their degrees and the years that they've taught and all of this as almost like a fortress, like to keep people away, instead of coming clean about who they really are and why they love music and why they love teaching. So if I had to hear one more time that someone is passionate about music, it's like, please, let's let go of those cliches about being unique and all of this, and instead like show that.
Mm.
That, I think that is the biggest thing. I think people are so afraid of being real, because what's behind that is scarcity thinking, or just feeling like I'm not good enough, I'm not something enough. And if we could all just be a little bit more human in our promotional materials, it's so much more engaging. If you just think like night and day, that's actually why I love doing this work, because the before and after is just incredible.
Yeah, it's really powerful. And I think one thing I have learned over time with teaching websites in particular is to, while the bio is important and people would like to see that, that's not the thing that parents or students go to the website for. They want to know what you will give your student, what is different and unique about you. That's why it comes back to, again, this passion, taking off the mask, showing what's really you and actually stating that. And what the students will get from it, rather than, yes, I went to this university and have this degree and me thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so nice to connect with that real love of teaching and that mentoring of students. And it's so clear when that is really at the core of what somebody does. So that can really make a huge difference.
Well, Angela, I feel like I've just had a shot in my arm of just great vibes from you. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. It's been an absolute pleasure. Let us know, where can people find out more about you? You've got obviously your coaching and you've also got a book as well. Can you tell us quickly about that?
Sure. It's called Beyond Talent, Creating a Successful Career in Music. And the third edition came out in 2020. Wow, what a year. And
what a year.
Yeah. And it is primarily for performers, but all of the chapters on bios and promo materials, all of that. And there's teaching artist work in there. So there's plenty. My website is angelabeeching.com, and Beeching has two E's. And on the front page there's a little freebie that people might be interested in getting. It's my music career traction guide. So I love giving people that because it has, I think, just five basic steps to help you get into motion if you've been feeling kind of sick or kind of stuck where you are in your career right now. And I think with COVID, a lot of people just need that extra adrenaline.
A shot in the arm from Angela. There you go. We'll put links to both your book and also your website in our show notes for today's episode. Thank you so much for being here today, Angela. I hope we can keep in touch. It's been wonderful.
Yeah. Thank you, Tim.
Well, how great was that, friends? I really hope you enjoyed my discussion here today with Angela. And I do hope you go and check out some of her resources and grab that download that's on her website. She is just such a beautiful, calming, warm, progressive influence into the world of career development for musicians and music teachers. I hope it has given you some thinking, some ideas for what you might do, and maybe some ideas about what your secret project might be, that one that's been rattling around in the back of your head for a while. And this is the kind of help that you can get inside Top Music Pro Evolution membership. This is the top tier of our membership. And this is the place where I coach teachers around the world to build an audience, to grow a following, to work out what products they might offer, and to then launch them successfully to the market and help with all those questions about email marketing and funnels and online marketing and Facebook advertising, all those kinds of things. So if there's a little bit of a story in the back of your mind or a project that you've been wondering whether you could do yourself, that method book series that you've always wanted to write because you can't find one that's quite right for you, or that course that you think you could offer other teachers, or that podcast that you would love to launch, whatever it is, come and join us inside Top Music Pro membership. You can find out heaps more about it, and particularly the course that it's built around, which is called Music Teacher Startup, over at musicteacherstartup.com. Go and check it out now, guys. I'd love to welcome you inside. Now, next week on the podcast is someone who's going to help answer the question, if you've ever wondered whether your teaching could be helped by having your own app. So this is going to be really relevant for both in-person but also online teachers. And we've got someone coming on the show who is very, very famous. He's very well known in the online area of app building. And he's got some great tips to share with us for anyone that's interested in that topic. So come and join us next week. Now, as a reminder, of course, if you've missed anything on today's show, or you'd like to grab a transcript, then just head over to topmusic.co/episode235. You'll be able to grab all of that. Until next week, I'm Tim Topham, and you've been listening to the Topcast from topmusic.co. I will be in your ears, hopefully, next week. Bye-bye. For more information about this episode and to find out how to enhance your own teaching, visit topmusic.co. You'll find everything you need for your studio, from lesson plans to cheat sheets, quick win teaching ideas, and guides on how to build your teaching business. Plus, you'll be connected to a global community of the world's top music teachers. And when you're ready, join hundreds of other teachers around the world by becoming a Top Music Pro member and get access to all our bonus content and flagship courses. And don't forget to follow topmusic.co on social media and subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. That's all for today. We'll see you in the studio.